Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course I'm Al Warren, and we've got the Karate Kid here.
Hey Al.
Wow, you keep on putting those videos up. You see all those, all that stick work. So your neighbors really must be scared of you now.
Yeah, they think I'm a nut.
Well, wouldn't you just go out in the middle of the road and start doing that, or what?
No, that's on my patio.
Oh, okay. I thought it kind of looked like you were out in the,
like in the middle of the road.
The middle of the road or out in the yard and just kind of throwing all these sticks around. And
yeah, it's like it's like forced perspective or whatever. It makes it look like you're out in the road the way the camera probably captures it.
Yeah, I was waiting for
makes
the
it more exciting.
Well, if the cops should show up, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
They start dragging you away.
Like, who is this guy?
Yeah. I mean, I'd call the cops right away.
Yeah, so that's my Kali stick work. Yeah.
that's I had a different name for it, but nobody cares. Nobody cares what I say. Anyway, so it's been a week. And now to finish off the week, we're going to be talking about science fiction, young adult. We're going to be talking writing, and not with you.
That's right.
We have a special guest here now. His book, I believe it's his first book, and it's called Spark. And the writer is our guest, Pat Daly. Thank you for being here, Pat.
Oh, my pleasure to be here, Al.
We'll see if you say that at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Might not be that feeling. No, I'm innocent. Wow. So I will say, it's certainly interesting. You've got I see it's called, I believe, hard science fiction. And I always ask authors that do this type of work how they see hard science fiction. Like, what is that to you?
Okay. To me, hard science fiction is speculation based on our current understanding of science, technology, and engineering. I bow before Arthur C. Clarke, who said that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So I'm willing to give people a pass when they make technological leaps. I mean, that's certainly been history forever that we've advanced in terms of technology and our understanding of the universe. What differentiates it from, I think, generic science fiction is that I rely a little more on the as-is state. And I'm projecting not too far into the future. In fact, it's I think really the difference between what I'm writing now and reality is a matter of money.
Oh, okay. So the money in a capitalist world sort of would bring it to now. So it's, you're saying near future. You also write young, you're calling it young adult. How does that translate with something like hard science fiction?
I think it maps over fairly well. I think a lot of times authors underestimate the knowledge and intelligence of younger readers. And even though I say it's young adult, what I really mean is that it's family friendly. I don't have a lot of cussing in it. I don't have a lot of sex in it, because I just want it to be, to appeal across a broad spectrum. And I wanted it, my wife's a school teacher. I wanted it to be a book that she could have in the classroom and it would survive at least the first couple of rounds of PTA scrutiny, and it wouldn't be banned or burned, at least not immediately.
Wow. You never let your wife check things. Come on. That's and she's a teacher. Holy cow. You're asking for trouble there.
She, when I first started talking about this, this idea I had for the book, we're out to dinner and it's still just a germ of an idea in my head. And I started throwing out ideas and I'm going to have this and this. And she immediately goes into teacher mode. Okay, well, have you thought about this? What about this? What about this? And I have to say, I probably did not react well to that constructive feedback. And she told me after that evening, she said, I will not read this book until it's published. So right away, I lost my primary beta reader. So I've learned to keep a little bit more control over my my tongue and my sensitivity about my writing.
Yeah, you have to be careful. That's dangerous prospect there. Yeah. Well, so let's get into the book a little bit. This book's called Spark. Did you have a vision of what you wanted to come out in the book? Like, did you have that ahead of time and you kind of knew what you wanted it to be? And if so, did you get that outcome? Did it work for you?
I had kind of broad strokes of what I wanted. I had a few particular things that I knew I needed to include just for my own personal satisfaction, like the Blackgrass technology, which is a passive solar power technology. I wanted to include that. I knew I had to have some conflict, and I wanted also to address, at least peripherally, kids in the foster care system, because I think there's a lot of improvement that could happen in that world.
So when you do something like that, and that's it's almost like you're saying it's almost a subtext. It's almost kind of a something you want people to get out of the book besides the story. There's sort of an underlying thing there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a predominant theme, but it is a subtext. It runs through some of the characters' decisions, and it certainly, at least early in the story, motivates their actions.
Does it take quite a bit of research, I guess, is what I'm thinking at now, I'm aiming at, to make sure that you get all your facts right when it comes to that?
It does. I had some stuff woefully wrong, embarrassingly wrong. So I did a fair amount of research. I talked to people in the system, on the government side, and to some families that had done fostering as well. And it's got great motivation behind it. But as is often the case, our hopes and our dreams, our aspirations for a project or a system of dealing with kids that are, you know, either no longer safe in their own homes, or they no longer have homes, because in the case of the book, yeah, there's some orphans, and without immediate family in one case, or any family to take them in, and so they end up in the foster care system. And I had people designed as villains within that system, and I think that's not really the case. I don't think anybody goes into it either as on the Child Protective Services side or the foster parent side with ill intent. I think everybody is well motivated and of good heart, but then reality intrudes and things often just don't work out the way we hoped they would.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough. Thinking about the technology that you're writing, did you find it difficult to project tech into the future with the speed of technological innovations today?
Yes. I was actually terrified that before the book got published, that reality would surpass it. And so I felt this burning under my seat to get me motivated to get the book in the hands of a publisher and get it out there into the world, because I didn't want, some science fiction ages really well. Yeah. Alfred Bester's The Star Is My Destination absolutely has aged well. It's almost 70 years old and still well worth reading. But others, when you have topical issues in there, may not age as well. And I was a little afraid that it wouldn't age as well, but I over worried about the advance of both the technology in VR and AR and the financial appetite to make some of these things a reality, at least in the near term.
Now in the book, you've got characters that are young, because it's young adult mm-hmm. frame. So like, Will and some of those. How do you get in the minds of a 16-year-old kid now, even though I know it's kind of near future? So you've got to get into a young teenager's mind today, kind of even a little bit futuristic too. So how do you kind of do that?
Well, I'm a guy.
Yeah.
I've never grown up.
Okay. That's true.
One of the things that was recommended me to do was to read current science fiction. You know, what were the top five bestsellers the year I was trying to get this published? And so I read those and thought, well, I have kids and my kids have friends, and I understand at least how they react to some things. I certainly don't understand why or how they react the way they do to other things. But I tried to spend a lot of time talking with people in the target age group, which really is, 12 to 16. And I've got one young friend, in India who was 13, 14 when I started talking about writing with him over the net, and getting his input was very, very helpful. So, it turns out that it's not a good idea to hang around playgrounds and just tell people that you're there to do research.
I was going to say, how was that in the actual research? I mean, boy. You're asking for trouble.
Yeah, but hey, I've got a wife who's a teacher, so it was a little easier to have access to children in a safe, controlled environment.
Yeah. So is this like, how do you say this? Did you notice a big difference with the kids you're getting, you know, dealing with and using as compared to when you were a kid?
I think the biggest difference is the way in which they consume content. For me, it was, you know, I'd listen to the radio or CDs in my car. I'd watch TV, go to the movies. And now, well, especially during the ongoing COVID issues, movie theaters are falling by the wayside, and kids are far more likely to watch something on their phone than they are even to watch it on a big screen TV. So that was the biggest difference. And I had to make sure that I projected that phone reliance or screen reliance onto the characters in the book as well.
Yeah, and they're just that way now until their eyes go. Wait till they get a little bit older. Well,
yeah, they're going to be using reading glasses at 22.
Well, yeah. I think that I think one of the hard things to look at when you're doing science fiction too is like everything we're doing now, for instance, in 20 years will be kind of past tense. They'll mm-hmm. be doing it all differently. Just like if you look 20 years ago, if you look at the 90s, the way we lived and everything is so much different than it is now with all these little things. So I would say that's probably a really hard thing to do, even though you're kind of doing near future. Isn't there kind of a chance you'll get things wrong?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. you know, I look at some stuff that, you know, even guys like Larry Niven, big names in science fiction, the way they projected the future, some of it came to pass and some of it has not, or has been completely different. The other day, I was driving with a guy from work and we're driving down the road and I needed to talk to a colleague in the Marshall Islands. And so I just pull up my phone, you know, I check the time because I don't want to wake him up in the middle of the night. And I have a Teams meeting with him with video, no real discernible lag. And he's quite literally on the other side of the planet and I'm in a moving vehicle. Nobody projected that kind of advance in that kind of technology. Maybe Dick Tracy era, we had the two-way wrist TVs, but none of the big writers foresaw that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of it's a really good point because that can change your story completely. If you base it on something like that, some sort of technology that doesn't exist or never really took off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a key thing. So another thing I also curious about is when you're dealing with the young people too, and the situations that they encounter with each other, how they react to certain things. Because like someone like us, like when you say someone about how we communicate on their cell phones and how we do all these things, it's new and it's kind of weird to us because we lived a life there where we had a dial-up box out of our house, you know, like, mm-hmm. so it's a change. But for someone young, it's just how they always have known it. So I guess you got to be really careful on how they act or react to things going on.
And I'm with you on there. I'm a digital immigrant and my kids are digital natives. So they get it so much more fluidly than I do. Often I have to really struggle. Like I've been building a website and my daughter's been helping me and I'm so happy that she's been able to help me because it's like, oh, okay, well, you got to click here and do this. And it's, you know, she's got the mouse flying over the screen and I'm four or five screens behind trying to process everything that has happened. So yeah, you gotta be really careful, I think, as you write things that are going to project into the future. Alfred Bester, The Star Is My Destination, I think that was set in 2350 or 2550, something like that. So that's 500 years from now. And still, his fiction still stands up. There's a couple little oddities that you look at and you go, oh, that was kind of quaint. But for the most part, the things he projected are largely possible and foreseeable.
What about pop culture references? Did you have to look at that? Did you kind of, worry that you might make some references that young people just wouldn't know today? Like from our youth.
Yeah. In fact, I had one reference to one of the characters moving like the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz mm-hmm. before Dorothy found the oil can.
Yeah.
and I got just eviscerated by my critique group over that. They're not going to know, dude. Just yeah. We get it because when I was a kid, we watched Wizard of Oz, but nobody's watching it now.
It was every year.
And so, yeah, it was. It was a yearly tradition, and it was the first thing I really remember seeing in color. And I'm sure there were other things that came out in color, but I loved the storytelling aspect of the transition from a tale that begins in black and white and transitions to color and then ends in black and white. I thought, oh, that was pretty genius for the filmmaker to do that.
Yeah, it always reminded me of going back and forth from Canada to the U.S. because I lived in both. And going to Canada was like being in color, and going to the U.S. was coming back to black and white. And I don't mean that in a slam. It just sort of, that's how, as a kid, that's how it related to me.
Hmm.
That's all. I'm just like, hate mail goes to Dave, remember?
Yes.
doesn't come to my remember. It goes into him, and if it's serious enough, you'll pass it on.
Okay. That's right.
Wow. So what did you plan on writing this book? So, and I'm wondering, what was your thought in writing this book? Like, what did you hope to gain? Like, what? I guess I'm not really saying this right, but what were you hoping to achieve with this book?
Some of it was for my own personal edification, to prove that I could do it, that I could write well enough that somebody would say, you know what? We'll take a risk on this. We'll publish this book. And thank you so much to Fern Brady and Inklings Publishing for taking the risk on me. But the other was that I think I've had a few stories rattling around in my head that I just needed to get out. You know, I'm cramped for space up there anyway. I just needed to get some of these stories out on a page so I could move on and start thinking about something else.
Yeah, and you start running out of memory at this age. So
indeed.
You got to put it on some sort of media so that, you know, later they're telling you, no, you wrote that. While they're wiping your chin.
Yeah.
Who wrote this book? So now is this planning to be part of a series? Like, do you kind of plan on going further into the characters you used in this book?
It wasn't until I wrote the last page of the book that I knew there was going to be a sequel. And as soon as I wrote that last sentence, I realized, oh, there is way more of this story to tell. And so I started kind of doing an outline of what I thought book two would look like. And so when I was going through the revision cycles, and I don't know what your publishing experience has been in terms of getting feedback from your editors and having to change things. I mean, you've done this far more than me, Al. Mm.
It's up and down like a toilet seat. I'm serious because some publishers and even the same publisher, you have different editors at time, and some are rather aggressive. Some have different outlooks on what they expect in a book. So it's really tough. It's different from person to person. It's a tough one to read.
Yeah, and that's good to know because as I went through the revision cycles, some of the suggestions were, I just don't want to do that. I don't think that would be consistent with the characters, and others were, my God, how could I have been so blind that I missed either that opportunity or I missed I had a big gaping plot hole that I hadn't tied up. And so I found, at least with, the first book, that the revision cycle was very helpful for me.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, it turns out good. Usually, it can be rather, hard. I remember the first book and going through, a lot of emotion or upset with this because of the different, because you feel like you're being attacked a little bit. And the truth is, with the editor, they're usually trying to make the book better if they're a good editor. But, you know, the one that picks out something and makes you realize something that you've missed are the ones you hold on to. Because I've done that. I ran across an editor from years ago, and I use her now for everything. Even if I'm sending it to a different publisher, I run it through her first, come back with it, and then send it to a publisher. So it's something you grab a hold of a good editor if you find one.
Good to know. Yeah,
definitely. Good to know. Otherwise, you know, that's what you knew. You just mentioned you read one of my books. That was the very first book. Actually, the second book I wrote, the first book published. And that was a big hit. But I absolutely hate that book.
Really?
I absolutely hate that book because that was one of those. It was the first time I dealt with the publisher and editors and the whole thing, and I had a really rough go of it. And it got changed a lot, and then, of course, you know, go through all that stuff, and I felt very, most of it is my issue. Don't get me wrong. It was my experience and how I saw it at the time. And so I look back at it as kind of a, good. I'm glad I went through it, but it was a hard experience. It was really hard on me. And whenever someone says, "Oh, I read that book," I always cringe. So, no, that's my worst book. But it's actually probably my biggest selling book ever.
Sorry, Al. I love the book.
Oh, good. I'll take it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's one of these things that we look back at as a writer. I think when you, same as this book now, Spark, you've written. So you've got it out, but, you know, 10 years down the road and you've got more books out and you're more familiar and comfortable and you get better each time you go through this process too. Mm-hmm. You get better at writing because when you learn to edit more yourself and what you should look for, you just get better. So in 10 years from now, when you look back at Spark, you'll probably feel the same way. Maybe not as bad as I do, but you probably will go, oh, geez, and you reread it 10 years, you might go, well, I would write this different. I would change that. I would do this. Because we just become better at what we do. That brings me to this, when you say that you didn't know until the last part that it was going to become more of a series, it was going to go further. So when you sit down to write a book, are you the person that actually outlines all this? Did you have Spark kind of all outlined how it was?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Going to begin kind of the ending and some of the main plot twists, and you just kind of fill it in as you go? Or is this totally you get up and write, and where it goes, it goes?
I'm a little more where it goes for both Spark and the second book, Fire. I wrote an outline that was 3 pages long. And then I left that as the end pages of the document. So as I started writing, it just kept moving down in the document, made it easy for me to find it again. And I would find that sometimes I had really strayed away from the outline. And that, you know, that's okay, as long as the story is still good. And then other times when I'd go back to it after writing 6-8 chapters, I go, oh, you know, I forgot I was going to put this in there, and then go back and either try to weave it in or decide, yeah, you know, maybe the next book that makes it.
So when you do that, you see, this is strange because I don't see you as this type of guy, but if you're kind of going by the seat of your pants, as they say, then would mood affect the way you write? So, you know, you're fighting with your wife and, you know, over dinner and stuff. And so can you just go home and write? Or does that affect everything?
Oh, the mood does affect the writing. And sometimes I use that to my advantage, because for me, music is a big trigger of mood. And so, I have a playlist that I listen to while I'm writing. And if I'm writing, a fight scene or a high tension scene or something where I want the pace to be fast, then I'll tend to, go to some, you know, some rock anthems and something with a strong, fast, beat to it. And then if I want something to be a little more poignant or introspective, I will go to something like, you know, Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence, to help engender the mood that I want to infuse into the writing.
I was going to say, you said you like to use it for your advantage, so you get in a fight with your wife on purpose. I feel like this kind of mood. Hey, so you go.
Yeah, can we edit that out?
Yeah. We'll cut that part out. No, I'm going to amplify it, turn it up loud. I could see that. So you got some Metallica on your playlist?
Yeah.
No.
I do.
Oh, okay. See, you're a surprising guy. You're probably very, very emotional and in touch with your feelings guy. though you seem very alpha.
Okay.
Well, I thought I'd throw that
in. Sure, I'm not sure what that means.
Well, you just seem very, like if you were sitting there and you said you were a policeman, I would believe it. Like an enforcement man, okay. Or you'd be a, military, I'm a colonel, mm-hmm. Or something. That would not surprise me. I think your personality fits that. So you're not really a touchy-feely kind of guy in the sense of, you know what I'm saying? Like not.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're absolutely right there.
See, that's why it surprised me. And I'm just saying that because you have that appearance, mm-hmm. Certain things kind of set me. Oh, okay. So your mood does matter. And so it does matter if you're kind of in a, because that's part of the emotional strength. But at the same time, you're that upfront kind of alpha guy. That's kind of what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And actually, one of the things that I heard from my early readers before the book even made it to the publisher was, this is really kind of a flat affect book. And, does your protagonist, your main male and female characters, does he think she's pretty? Because you don't even talk about that, So part of that is intentionally trying to infuse more of the inherent emotions into the characters on the page.
I'm wondering, too, did you pull in anything from your work, hobbies, or activities, or anything like that to inform this book?
Absolutely. I'm a gamer. I love playing role-playing games. Even back in the day, I played some tabletop Dungeons & Dragons kind of stuff. And now it's by and large migrated to console or PC gaming. But I still love those. And some of there are a couple of nods or shout-outs to some of my favorite games and some of my favorite shows and movies and books in Spark. I didn't want to make it a big overt, hey, this is all about 80s trivia. but I wanted it to be, if I make a Star Trek reference, I want it to be appreciated by people that watched or understand Star Trek without it taking away from the book if they didn't get it. Mm. So I didn't want to make it mandatory that you know all about, Spock and his relationship with McCoy. But I wanted it to be appreciated by those who had that same background.
Well, did you mention Atari?
We are dating ourselves, aren't we?
Well, yeah. I do that every day.
Commodore 64.
Yeah. I'll tell you. Commodore 64. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be 64 soon. Yeah, unplug. And so who are your influences? This is kind of a cliche question, but do you, and I don't just mean writing, like do you ever find yourself going to other media, like maybe you watch certain movies or shows or certain things that are kind of give you kind of a drive to write?
Yeah, I love a good murder mystery, and I love the delicate way that a murder mystery author can tease you with clues and subtly lead you in the direction or intentional misdirection to figuring out who done it. So I like those as well. I'm a big John Sanford fan. And then I do a fair amount of nonfiction reading as well, and enjoy this guy. I stumbled onto his podcast, actually was referred to it by a friend of mine, a guy named Tim Ferriss, and he works almost exclusively with nonfiction and self-improvement kind of stuff. And he turns out to be a pretty good writer. I've got a couple of his books on my shelf, and he's done a good job of showing nice, tight writing in his prose. So, you know, I can rely, you know, lean back on that a little bit, look at that stuff. So yeah, I try to do a lot of reading and research outside the genre as well as within the genre.
And of course, my books.
Yeah, of course. The book.
Well, he read.
Which will not be named.
The book will not be named.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible book.
Yeah. I actually found it more fascinating because in my day job, during that same era, I was doing some consulting with the Canadian Air Force, and I had friends, one of whom went on to become the wing commander of 8 Wing at Trenton. And it was just phenomenal to me that all this took place. I never remembered seeing anything about it in the paper, and nobody ever started off a meeting by saying, yeah, so, you know, we got a serial killer in the Canadian Air Force, eh?
Hey, yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's not something that is really popular in Canadian or British culture, right? It's not a whole lot of stuff goes on the media about stuff like that. So it's much quieter, you know. But it's going to change. It's going to change. I was just on CNN for that book. So we'll see.
Really, for that book?
Yeah, yeah. That Lies, Crimes, and Videos in the next season that's coming out here very soon. It's spring, so I don't know exactly the date. But, yeah, they came and filmed me for a while, and we talked about Colonel Russell Williams.
Oh, very cool.
Powdered your head?
And they had – no, they didn't powder my head on that one.
Oh, no. Not that one. Okay. That's a different one.
That's the Killing Game one. They just powdered my head. You know, I guess I'm getting too shiny and bald. How insulting. Well, so now this is going to be kind of a probably a weird question for you, not like any of the other ones aren't, but the your characters, how do you experience them? And I ask that because there's been so many fiction writers that we have that talk about their characters like they're their kids or they're like really best friends or family and stuff, and some experience their voices and their vision and stuff like that. Like Dave hears voices all the time. And it's kind of a little bit scary, but
I'm hearing them right now.
See, and but do you have that same experience with yourself?
I do. And a little of the main character was patterned off a young man that I knew. And I tried to think about how he would react in certain situations. And I mean, the character evolved way beyond my limited understanding of the young man that I kind of used as a model. And then the female lead, we were on a family trip. I have two daughters and both girls, everybody had gone into a market, and when they came out, my youngest daughter said something that I heard as feral daughter. And I thought, oh God, what a great name for a boutique or a line of counterculture clothing or something like that. And I said, what were you talking about when you said feral daughter? And she said, what do you mean? I didn't say that. It was something completely different. But I decided at that point that needed to be the avatar name of a character in the book. And I let that character at least start as kind of an amalgam of my two daughters. And then, yeah, honestly, I spend a lot of time with my characters now, falling asleep with them, walking the dogs in the morning. I'm hearing dialogue and where they might go and what's happening next. So yeah.
Do they take over your driving?
No.
OK. Okay. Just checking to see how safe society is here.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to basically ask something very similar. Is that when you're writing these, are your characters, do you feel like you're in control of these characters, or do you feel like they have a mind of their own and they decide to rebel against the plot or what have you?
Yeah, they actually do develop a mind of their own, and sometimes rebel. And then if they get too rebellious, I have to kill them.
That's the way to do it.
Wow. So be on the lookout.
If you see
Pat Bailey walking his dog in the park, go the other way.
Yeah, that's right.
just stay away from that man. I'll tell you. Now, so do you have your website up? Do you have it all finished and people can come find you on that or no?
No, the website just got populated with the basic theme that I bought this morning. And so the best way to get in touch with me or to see what I'm up to would probably be my blog.
Okay, and what's the blog address then so we can put it up?
The blog address is feraldaughters.wordpress.com.
Okay, of course, now we're going to have that up. Do you like to do social media, too? Are you hanging out there and talking with people, or do you avoid that?
I used to avoid it like the plague.
No pun intended.
Because I just, because I thought, how much can I contribute to the world in 144 characters? Or do I really want to share pictures with people? And so much of what's on social media is just garbage. And I thought, nah, that's not for me. And then I realized I'm mercenary enough to realize that it's a good marketing tool. And so I've become more and more active. And the whole blog thing has been a huge surprise to me, that it helps me get some of these ideas out of my head onto the screen, and words and thoughts, even characters that may not have had much of a backstory. I'll blog about them, tell how they got to be where they were. And I was even considering serializing the second book, but my publisher shot that down in a hurry.
You need to try TikTok.
Yeah. Get on the TikTok. You're ready for it. You're ready. Get on there and start dancing with your book and bring your dog on. Talk to yourself a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
Just rip your shirt off. Yeah. And say, buy this book now. I'm coming for you.
That'd be one way to get the book banned.
Yeah, well, at least they'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Right?
There's no bad publicity.
Yeah, all publicity is good.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I've had a few
maybe not today.
There. Yeah, no.
Okay.
It's really interesting. So now, so people can find you, you're hanging out on Twitter and Facebook then? Is that it? Or
Twitter, Facebook, Insta. On Facebook, I'm Pat Daly Author. On Twitter, I'm the same. And on Instagram, I'm Pat Daly Picks, PICS.
Oh, wow. That must be a little bit more fun, that one.
Yeah.
We'll have to check into that one. We'll have that one highlighted. Wow, that's interesting. So how did the COVID work for you? Because this book is just fresh out. You must have been writing it over the plague over the last couple of years. And being that you sort of get affected by things, does all that tension in the air the last couple of years kind of seep in, or did it affect your writing?
It affected my writing in that it gave me a lot more time to write. At the time, during the whole lockdown phase, we were living in a small town in Washington State, small town of Moses Lake, Washington. It's got a population of about 20,000-ish. And so, pretty separated from the super spreader events and everything. It wasn't, in Moses Lake, Washington, it was irritating because people bought up all the toilet paper. Other than that, it was like, eh, not such a big deal. And then just last year, we moved back to Houston, and just the move was a significant change. People far more polarized about it in Houston than we ever saw in Moses Lake. So that was interesting. But by and large, it gave me more time to write, and I was happy with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Houston's a little bit more polarized in everything. So,
I mean, and
the bigger cities, you have a lot more people, so you're going to have to deal with a lot more of the, you know, it's more of a noise, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Moses Lake, wow. It's not too far away from, I've been in Spokane quite a bit before, so.
Oh, yeah, we had to fly in and out of Spokane for Moses Lake.
Yeah, only city going. Yeah, well, you have to be careful. Well, it's certainly been an interesting conversation. Where do you see stuff going now? What's going to happen with Pat Daly now that you're kind of like, I don't know, like Madonna or something, and you're famous and book, and you're on interviews on NBC now, and you got
publicist,
and you got... You know, you're in the big city and you're, you know, geez. I mean, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. I want to write more and more. I want to spend more time polishing that craft and getting more of my bizarre schemes out into the world through my books. And so I hope that is... in my future, and I'd love to also get a chance to experiment or see the work in other media, whether it's, you know, on a movie or a TV show or even an audio book. I would love to get this pushed onto an audio format because I think print reading is going down and audio reading is going up because people still spend a ton of time driving to and from work, and they might as well be listening to your show or my
good
book.
Good thing you said that. Yes.
I
was ready to jump on that. And he says, you might as well be listening to my book on audio. No, forget about this show.
But,
I'll tell you. No, you know what? The audiobook has got a big boom and all that because – people our age and baby boomers and Generation Xers are getting old and it's tougher to read.
Yeah.
You know? And then the young ones just like audio. So it's a good medium to be on. It's a little bit pricey, but it's a good one to be on.
Mm-hmm. So you audioized, audibleized? I'm not sure what the
I probably have about 20 books on Audible, give or take.
Okay. So as somebody that makes their living at least partially through your voice, did you read your own work?
No. I'm not good at that. No. This has been a long haul for me to get to do voice radio and to do it and become successful at it. I couldn't do a book at this stage in my life, perhaps in the future, but not right now. No, I've got, well, the publisher usually takes care of it. But there is one guy I had do a separate book that I published myself, Brian Rollins, who does a lot of audio books professionally and does a really, really good job. I'm super happy with that. And other than that, the publishers have always pretty much contracted it out.
Yeah, because, you know, I drive a lot, like anybody else, and so sometimes I listen to audiobooks, and it's interesting. I've listened to Neil Gaiman read his own work and been blown away by his narrating abilities. And then I've read other or listened to other books where it's a full cast recording and also incredible. So
yeah, the cast recording's really good. One of our co-hosts, John Copenhaver, has two books, and he has had cast recordings
read the book, like different voices. And I think it's great. I think it sounds great. It's entertaining. I like listening to the old shows anyway. Old talk radio shows, not like, I mean, more like, you know, mystery and suspense and stuff like that, not talk talk radio, but mystery shows. And so I like it. I like that. It's good entertainment for me. And a lot of writers, you know, if you're an author, a lot of authors can read their own book, and it turns out really good because it's coming from them. They did it. It's their story. They know it. So I think it's a really good thing to do. If you feel comfortable doing it, I would suggest doing it yourself. Because like this story, Spark, you know it inside out. You wrote it. You know the feeling behind it. You don't have to read it, get to know it, and to know where to put inflections in your voice, sort of. You know what I mean? You just know it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anytime an author can read it, go for it. Anyway, so I think, yeah, there you go. So that's fantastic. And your next book comes out when, after this? You've got part two or book two coming out?
Yeah, book two, tentatively titled Fire. And it should be out. Originally, we were shooting for December of 2022 for publication to try to hit the Christmas buying spree. But I'm thinking that may slide a little bit, so it may be a springtime, late winter, early spring release.
Oh, well, you know, if we're still here, yeah, that'd be great.
yeah.
You could do a sub-series and call it, like, Match, Lighter.
Oh, yeah. Fluid, yeah.
See, I'm here to help. I do nothing but help. Well, anyway, now the book we've been talking about today is Spark, and it's out available today. Of course, you can go to the website. You'll find it. You can go to Pat Daly's links that we'll have up on as well. Find him. Hunt him down. give him a review. Say something nice. Or don't say it at all. That's what my mother used to say. So guest is the author, Pat Daly. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Pat.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.